The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, I'm Rabbi Rami, and this is the Spirituality and Health podcast. Our guest today, Vanessa Shakur, is a visual artist, herbalist, environmental activist, and the founder of Sacred Warrior, an organization devoted to deepening our relationships with the environment. Her new book is Awakening Artemis, Deepening Intimacy with the Living Earth and Reclaiming Our Wild Nature. Vanessa Shakur, welcome to the Spirituality and Health podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm really happy to have you here. The book was really a great read.
Thank you.
You explore things that I knew nothing about. So it's always a pleasure to go, oh, wow, I'm getting new information.
Oh, good.
And since it was all new, I don't really have an opinion. So okay. You actually get to talk with me without me talking at you.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, I was intrigued just by starting with the dedication of your book. You dedicate the book to your mom, Andrea, and to Mother Earth, and to your wild green friends, especially weeds. You know, right there, I was going, weeds? Weeds are my friends? So, and yet the title of the book leads us to the Greek goddess Artemis. So I thought it would be a good place to start to have you tell us a little bit about Artemis and why or how Artemis came into your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting, actually. I became reacquainted with Artemis through a weed, speaking of weeds. One of the first plants I worked with when I started my herbal training is Artemisia vulgaris, which is mugwort, very, very common weed that grows throughout temperate regions of the world. And at the time, I was living in Brooklyn, New York, and just really starved for nature. And this plant was everywhere around me. And I learned at the time, I was delving into herbal practice. And when I learned that this plant was edible and medicinal, had this rich history and folklore, and then learned the botanical name relating to Artemis, it brought so many pieces of the puzzle together for me. And I always had a connection to Artemis. She is the Greek goddess of the moon, the protector of the wild, of nature, of animals, protector of women. And when I was doing research for the book, I became really, really interested in the ways that these guardians of the wild, these mythical guardians of the wild, become literal guardians when we believe in them or when we honor them. So as an environmental activist, the archetype of Artemis really brought everything together for me. And then as a woman who's overcome a lot of obstacles personally and a martial artist, I also identify with Artemis. As an activist, you know, I feel like she's an archetype of the environmental activist, a woman warrior. So it just brought all of these elements of the book together for me. The plants, you know, my own impulse to protect and defend the earth and women and my own body. And then also this idea of a guardian of the land.
Yeah, it seems like Artemis pulled together not only just aspects in the book, but in your life.
She sort of resonated
in a way that brought a harmony to all these different elements in your life that she could embody. You know, one of the things that, I mean, you've mentioned it several times already, that I'm very interested in is the notion of wildness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're growing up in Brooklyn, or I guess at the time you're talking about, you're in Brooklyn. Like you said, Brooklyn is not a hotbed of nature, though I've read that a tree grows in Brooklyn. But I don't know where wildness comes in the context of Western industrial, post-industrial civilization. We don't seem to have room for wildness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Well, I see the word wild, and you know, I have to kind of nod to Clarissa Pinkola Estes' book, Women Who Roam the Wolves. She defines wild in the same way that I do, and I really was very influenced by that. You know, just really our original nature. It's not being out of control. It's being attuned to our authentic selves in a way. It's peeling back all the layers of conditioning. And that can happen anywhere. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be in the middle of the woods or in the jungle. It can happen in the middle of Brooklyn too. So I see wildness as, you know, our natural selves.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. That we're not talking about being out of control.
Exactly.
I think a lot of people, and maybe it's just me, so let me not blame other people, but when I think of the idea of wild, the image, sadly, that pops into my head is the QAnon shaman, you know, just howling in the well of the House of Representatives. He's not acting out of his true nature, but the wild you're talking about is essential to who we are as beings. I won't even say human beings, but as beings. And yet it seems to me that the institutions that we grow up in, school, work, you know, these things are really designed to dampen the wildness, to maybe even erase our essential nature. Mm-hmm. How is your work a resistance to that?
Well, it's interesting. Long before I wrote the book, I was doing a lot of outdoor education. So I started studying herbalism really seriously about 15 years ago. And the reason I find that this practice is such a powerful way to help people reclaim their wildness is, for me, it felt like a deep remembering that we are interconnected with the land. So for example, you know, like I was mentioning the weeds, bringing back the weeds that you mentioned earlier. All of our ancestors worked with plant medicine, and we've become blind to these plants that are around us that have uses for, you know, to help us to heal. They're woven into folklore, history, medicine, food, you know, so we're walking around oblivious to all of this history around us that can also connect us back to our ancestral roots, you know, our indigenous roots, no matter where we're from, we all practice plant medicine. We all, at one point, you know, were in harmony with the land. And so, for example, when I was doing more retreats before COVID, I would bring people into these experiences, have them unplug, bring them through plant walks, reintroduce them to these wild plants. And it's really interesting that exposure, bringing people into these experiences of connection to nature, teaching them how to make medicine. It's like I said, it feels like a deep remembering to people. And it's just like once you lift that veil between people and the natural world, they can't unsee that. They see the land and the plants differently. And something drops away. Well, there are a few things that drop away. I feel like a level of anxiety drops away because they're like, oh, you know, these plants around us, like nature is really, you know, here. Not, I shouldn't say here to take care of us, but in the sense of, you know, we're not alone. You know, there are so many resources like literally under our feet. So, you know, for me, stripping away and dropping into my body in that way, I just, when I walk in the woods now, or when I'm alone in nature, I feel very supported and I feel such a strong sense of belonging that has been so healing for me. And I really, you know, I aim to help people remember that too and bring them into those experiences that make them feel that way. And then there's less grasping, right? There's less of this wanting to consume, or you're acting less from a place of scarcity and fear when you realize that, you know, you're connected, you're woven into this web of life, and you understand that these plants around you are not just weeds, they're not dangerous, they're not poisonous, and you can learn how to work with them. You know, you can remember that aspect of your wild nature.
Let me pick up on this word that you've used a couple of times about remembering. Mm-hmm. For two things that strike me when you're saying that. One is, if it's an act of remembering, the person who's remembering doesn't lack anything.
Right.
It's not like, right, there's no new thing I have to get. This is something that I'm given probably in the womb, or at least it starts, right? Mm-hmm. And then I lose it. And I would argue, because I'm into conspiracy theories today, I would argue there's a conspiracy that tries to get us to forget this true nature and is driven out, and that we need to remember who we really are.
Yeah.
And let me just add a couple of things and invite you to comment. Mm-hmm. I like to write the word often, remember, with a hyphen. So re-member.
Yes.
That we put ourselves back together, because we are parts of a larger whole, and we remember the whole of which we are a part. Mm-hmm. And none of that is commodified, right? You can't.
Right.
Okay, so that, I mean, we're on the same page. So speak to that if you can, that you have what you need to be whole. Mm-hmm. You've been conditioned to unwholeness, so that you can be sold the product of wholeness.
Exactly.
But through the way of the herbalist, it sounds to me that through the way of the herbalist, there's you're shattering the entire spiritual consumer industrial complex, if that's a term. Does that speak to what you're doing?
It does. It really does. And, you know, and it's not just herbalism. Like, you know, in the book, I draw from other practices and disciplines that have helped me. I often use the term peeling back layers of conditioning, you know, shedding old skins. And yeah, and then that, I really like that, the way that you said that, the remember, you know, putting your, it's like you, so as you know, I started the book with a car accident that I had when I was 16 years old, and it literally shattered me. You know, I fractured my back and my neck. And being in stillness for that period of time, I felt dismembered, quite literally. You know, none of my old defense mechanisms. I had, everything was shattered. And so that's why I start the book there, because I literally had to remember, I had to bring the pieces of myself back together, put them back together. But, you know, I always see that experience as a real blessing in disguise, because I had the opportunity to examine all of these things that I'd been like trying to hold on to so tightly, you know, all of these ideas of who I was, social conditioning, what success meant to me, you know, really putting a lot of pressure on myself to quote unquote succeed. And then also the trauma that I was kind of trying to avoid, but that broke everything open. I had to confront myself. And so I would say probably for a couple of years, I was just falling apart. But then, you know, going back to that term, like the hyphen of the remember, I was able to put the pieces back together. But that kind of revealed that authentic, wild, original self. Like I came into contact with that part of me that was always there, always at peace, waiting to be, you know, waiting to be remembered and waiting to be accessed again. You know, I just feel like that part of us is always there, that kind of wild nature, that original nature, that sense of wonder I had when I was a kid. I was always out in the woods all the time when I was a kid. So I really feel like the herbal practice, the environmental activism, all of the work I've done, you know, studying ecology, is going back to something. It's not anything new. Not only is it not anything new for me, I don't feel like it's anything new ancestrally, anything new as a human being, you know, but I was inclined to do all of that when I was a kid. I was always making potions in the woods and, you know, and so I just, the accident and all of my healing practice let all of that other stuff fall away that was globbed onto me that wasn't mine, you know? So yeah, so it's a combination of peeling back layers. For me, not only herbalism to me is an entry point for connecting people to nature. It's, you know, I mention the weeds a lot in the book because they're common plants that grow everywhere that can help us to access that connection. And it's accessible. You know, they grow in urban areas. They're tenacious. They have so much vitality and life force energy. And I think they're also important to kind of rewire our perception of weeds, because not only do we forget who they are as medicine, as access to our ancestral, you know, kind of lineage of uses of them because they were brought here for a reason originally. But, you know, we also try to eradicate them. You know, we poison ourselves and get rid of these plants like dandelion that could be food and medicine for us. So it's pretty insane, you know, if you think about it. So we're killing off our food and medicine and then poisoning our land in the process and killing the microbes in the soil. And yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot more to the book than weeds, but you have, you know, different weeds are sort of in every chapter. And that's what really captured my imagination and made me excited about reading the book, because I don't know anything about this stuff. But as I was reading it, I was thinking of all the ways, and I won't go through all the ones we could come up with, but all the ways we use the word weed as a pejorative.
Mm, yeah.
You know, like you're lost in the weeds and, you know, that kind of thing, or like kudzu. I don't know if kudzu has any value, but yeah, something grows like kudzu and it chokes off the life of a tree or something. The use of the word weed is so negative. And it sounds mm-hmm. to me, from what you're saying, that this is part of, you know, maybe conscious, I don't know, but if not conscious, then an unconscious desire on the part, as I read it in your book, according to the patriarchal side of humanity, patriarchal religion, patriarchy in general, even science, to denature the world in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really pushing back on a very fundamental level. I don't know if this is conscious, but I suspect it is.
Mm-hmm.
You're pushing back on a very fundamental level against the tide that dominates human discourse at the moment. You know, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about moving to another planet and terraforming it and, you know, right. let the Earth go to hell and yeah. we're going to go start over on Mars or something. I've seen the documentary with Arnold Schwarzenegger about Mars. It doesn't look that pleasant, but, you know, once they get the oxygen going, maybe it'll be better for them. But it really is an anti-nature and therefore, and I think this is safe to say, therefore anti-women worldview that is just killing us the way it's, like you said, the way it's killing the weeds. You write in the book, well, actually you quote James Baldwin in the mm-hmm. book. I love James Baldwin. And I'll just read the sentence that I want you to comment on. This is James Baldwin. He writes, "The victim who is able to articulate the situation of the victim has ceased to be a victim. He or she becomes a threat." Mm-hmm. Now, you can unpack the first part, but I'm most interested in becoming a threat. A mm-hmm. threat to whom? And if you see yourself, and I'll tell you up front, I do. If you see yourself in your work as a threat.
Mm-hmm. So, to the status quo. I mean, to go back to what you were, you know, touching on before, you know, this idea of ecofeminism, right? How the abuse of nature and the abuse of women is very much intertwined, you know, and that I actually touch on that in that chapter in particular, the Wild Rose chapter, because I, you know, I wrote about my sexual assault and this, the chapter is framed, it's really about not asking permission. And we do that to the land, just the way that, you know, a lot of women are assaulted in that way. You know, the land and women's bodies often suffer this non-consensual penetration, extraction, you know, and even if they haven't been violated, there's this kind of commodification of women's bodies in our culture. But, and like, you know, the earth is constantly, you know, abused in that way. But on the flip side, you know, going back to the weeds, if you leave somebody, give somebody the time and space to heal, just as like if you give the land the time and space to heal. I mean, sometimes we're at a point now where we do have to intervene in many cases because the land has just become so unbelievably depleted. But if that's not the case, you know, the earth can regenerate. And so, you know, these weeds are healing forces in some ways. Obviously, there are some that are invasive species that are, like you said, kind of overwhelming an ecosystem, but that's usually, you know, disturbed ecosystems where humans have come in and created an imbalance. So, you know, going back to the James Baldwin quote, I do see that. I see it from a grassroots perspective, and I like the analogy of the weed. You know, it's this force that arises from underground like a seed, right? It's this tiny thing, but then eventually just spreads and takes over. And so there's this incredible relentlessness and tenacity and, you know, just life force energy in these weeds that can also be kind of an ally for those of us who are working to unearth or uproot, it's the wrong term when what we're talking about, to just dismantle these really damaging patriarchal and capitalist ways of extracting from the earth and from our bodies too. You know, going back to the wild, you know, I see rewilding the self as coming back to our original nature, and rewilding the land, like I read about a lot in the book, is letting the land heal, you know, bringing back the relationships needed for the land to thrive. And we don't have to control the land, you know, whether it's like a manicured lawn or these like very controlled gardens or monoculture. You know, there's this idea of just like taming the land and taming our bodies and controlling the land. But when we cease to do that, like, and there's a lot of movements now with regenerative agriculture, rewilding projects, and permaculture, where that's what people are realizing. It's like when you when you work with the land, there is, so you don't have to work as hard. You know, when you allow things to be wild, it's so much easier, you know. So within our bodies and on the land too, we have so much more time and energy to just enjoy nature and enjoy life.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, I mean, when you talk to a rabbi, which you are, you have to be ready for a Bible quote or two. Mm. So
okay.
Let me just make two biblical references. One is this year in the Jewish calendar. So it's going to go into 2022. But this year in the Jewish calendar is a sabbatical year.
Okay.
Where if people did it, the entire, you know, you let the land lie fallow and you can eat whatever the earth naturally produces, and you're supposed to allow anyone who's hungry to come and eat off your land, and you don't put barriers up, and you do that every 7 years. So we're in the midst of one of these 7 year periods,
and interesting.
While people are trying to figure out how best to do it, especially in a place like the state of Israel, where that would mean shutting down the agricultural economy, most of the effort is how to get around doing it as opposed to actually doing it. But in the biblical, I imagine in the biblical context, people, they didn't have these industrial farms and all the rest of that. And you could actually, you know, do that. So how you, like you said, rewild the land is of extra import this year. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I was thinking of when we're talking about threat to the patriarchy in the Gospel of Matthew in the 13th chapter, I can even give you the verse 31. Jesus presents a parable where he says, the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed that a person took and sowed in a field. So a mustard seed, it's a weed, the mustard plant. So the kingdom of God is like someone who deliberately, because it says, this person sowed the mustard seed. The kingdom of God is like people deliberately sowing weeds and wildness back into the culture. It sounds like you hadn't heard that one in a while.
No. So
what is that? How does that speak to you?
Oh, I mean, yeah, that's the power of those small things, right? I mean, to me, that speaks to grassroots efforts or these ideas, you know, that are potentially invisible but that can just spread like mustard, like weeds, like, yeah, I love that idea. I think of another quote that's in the book, in the chapter about poison ivy. I have a quote by George Washington Carver that says, there is no need for America to go hungry as long as nature provides wild weeds and vegetables. I believe I'm quoting that correctly. So that's the other thing too, is just, you know, if we take advantage of these resources that are here for free, you know, there's so much, like I really became interested in herbalism, not just from, you know, the perspective. It was more about activism for me than making medicine and teaching people how to make medicine, quite honestly. It was like, oh my goodness, this is such a great gateway for people to reclaim these practices, to reconnect with the land, to ideally help honor these plants so we can eradicate these insane practices of killing off free food and medicine, you know, that are poisoning us. So it was really from that lens that I started to get so involved with it. And then of course, you know, my health has just improved exponentially from this practice. It's just, and in my own life too, I have let go of so much grasping and feel so much more at ease. And, you know, not only has my health improved because of taking medicine, but just because I feel like this stronger sense of belonging, connection to these practices and my ancestral roots. So it's that, and it's funny to go back to that other quote, like the threat is really about just like feeling more at home here. And then, but then you're not a really good consumer, are you? I mean, when you're content. So that's right. Threatening.
Yeah. 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 I want to ask you sort of a strange thing that I hadn't thought of when I read the book, but I heard just in the way you talked about weeds. I don't know if you did this more than once, but at least once I heard you speak of them as who they are, mm-hmm. as opposed to what they are.
Yeah.
And we had a woman on the show who works with beans. She was a Mexican chef, but a healer, and she works with beans. And the beans were alive to her in a way where she couldn't speak of them as it.
Yeah.
You know, they were. So is it the same?
Not at all. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but I made a concerted effort not to refer to any plant as it in the book, because it others us, right? I mean, to me, they're sentient beings in their own right. And yeah, I feel like when we just to refer to them as it's easier just to take without permission or just take without thinking or just to, you know, they have a role to play in the ecosystem. We can't exist without
yeah.
them. They were here before we were. So.
I mean, in some languages, there's like in Hebrew, there's no word for it.
Oh, really?
So that's you'd only so speak of the weeds as, you know, like you did who or he or she or, you know, something like that, because there is no it. So I'm very cognizant of the time. And I want to have you talk about one more thing. And
okay.
You end the book with a chapter called Mindful Wildcrafting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking for a way to end these podcasts, if it's possible, with something that you can leave the listener with, something that she could do to get involved in this work of reclaiming her wildness or his wildness. So can you talk a little bit about mindful wildcrafting and help people who want to get started in this practice get started?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, mindful wildcrafting, you know, it's, you know, like you touched on, it's really about awareness of your environment. Right. So obviously you need to make sure that you are harvesting a plant in an area that's safe to do so. You know, you don't want to harvest. I like to build relationship with plants on city streets, learn how to identify them, but I would never harvest from there. That's not a healthy place to harvest. So first surveying your environment, being aware of your environment, if it's safe for you to harvest and if you're planning to ingest the plant, really, really making sure that you know how to identify the plant clearly. Also, being clear about your intention. Why are you harvesting the plant? And then if you have a clear intention, for example, to make a tincture, how much do you need? You know, don't take more than you need. And even if, for example, I set out to harvest a particular plant, but I get to the location and there isn't enough, you know, if I know that whether it's the pollinators or the other animals or just the land itself needs that plant more than I do, I won't take it. So it's, you know, it's harvesting with reverence for the environment that you're in. It builds relationship to the environment that you're in because you're really paying attention. You're paying close attention. And then I really like the permission is respect. You know, you're respecting the land. You're not just taking. So going back to what we were talking about before about consent, you know, it's a, you're building a different kind of relationship. You're asking, you're acknowledging, and you're realizing that you're taking the life of another sentient being, you know, and that's powerful, you know, just to just, and it doesn't take very long to go through all of that in your mind. And then just the, you know, all of my teachers from, and if you go back to various indigenous traditions, there is this exchange. And I was taught to do that too, just to leave a token of gratitude, whether it's a genuine thank you. Like the act of plucking your hair from your head is very similar to plucking a plant from the land. So that's what I sometimes do. And it creates, like you said, it is a very, it's a momentary ritual, but it's really beautiful. And it's a deep act of reverence and a deep act of thanks. And I feel so grateful. And then it's just become woven into the way that I do it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very powerful. The whole notion of rewilding, reclaiming your wild nature, being a threat to the powers that be that are really trying to tame us in, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but tame us in service to the, you know, our corporate overlords kind of thing.
Exactly.
I mean, this is just fabulous stuff. And I thank you very much for writing the book as well as being on the podcast. Our guest today, Vanessa Shakur, is the author of Awakening Artemis, Deepening Intimacy with the Living Earth and Reclaiming Our Wild Nature. You can learn more about her work at vanessashakur.com. And you can look in Spirituality and Health magazine. She will be featured in an upcoming issue. Vanessa, thank you so much for talking with us on the Spirituality and Health podcast.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
So did I. Thanks. You've been listening to the Spirituality and Health podcast. If you liked this episode, please rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to share us on social media and tag us at Spirit Health Mag. You can also follow me on the Spirituality and Health website, where I write a regular column called Roadside Musings. Don't forget to subscribe to the print magazine as well. The Spirituality and Health podcast is produced by Ezra Baker Truppiano, and our executive producer is Mallory Corbin. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.
We spend a third of our lives sleeping and dreaming, yet most of us have no idea what goes on during that time. I'm Kelly Sullivan Walden, and as a dream expert and best-selling author, I'm here to empower you to mine the gold from your nighttime dreams. Join me on the Kelly Sullivan Walden Show, part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network, available wherever you get your podcasts. Until we meet again, don't take your dreams lying down.